it is not the space between heaven and earth, like a billows. It is empty, it lacks nothing. The more it moves, the more comes out of it. When we look at number 5, it seems to be disjointed. It may be that Lhasa was tired or he wanted to shift his energy into another manner. We don't really know. Listen to the beginning. Heaven and earth are not kind. They regard all things as offerings. The sage is not kind. He regards people as offerings. Is not the space between heaven and earth like billows? It is empty, but lacks nothing. The more it moves, the more comes out of it. This is a deeply significant insight, and one that I think that most people just do not regard or think of as having much consequence to it, but it does. Heaven and earth are like billows. Between heaven and earth, there's a tremendous light that is happening, a beautiful mystery. Everything is possible. All goodness, even all evil, is possible. So Lhasa is saying to us that all things that happen, happen as offerings, gifts that we can use or be utilized by, and then change the ebb and flow of our conditions, our circumstances, to the middle way, where it is no longer something that we are obsessed and composed of as the idea of right and wrong, good and bad. We no longer compose a story about any of it. The sage is not kind, meaning that the sage is not looking for the benefit of everything for himself or for other people. He sees people, he regards people as offerings. He understands that some are fodder. A great many of us are fodder. We live for another man's table. We live for the meat of another man's table, as I say. And that's the way we live. We give ourselves over to society and people and all sorts of ideas and ideals. And before you know it, we have lost ourselves. Then Lhasa shifts gears. Is not the space between heaven and earth like billows? You know what billows do? They blow air, making the fire bigger. The space between heaven and earth. What is that space? It is not something that is intellectual. It is not something that is emotional. It cannot be explained. Lhasa calls it the empty, the emptiness. It lacks nothing. And the more it moves, the more comes out of it. That's the billows. Heaven and earth offer to us a life where what is occurring in the heavenly part of us can manifest into the earthly part of us, which brings us to live beyond being the offerings, the fodder for another man's table. We no longer live as such. Rather, we live in not the confines of our human instincts, but we live in the beauty, the emptiness, the eternity that is simply no-thingness. I want you to focus a little bit on this idea. No-thingness. Can you sit in meditation without a thought? what I presented at the retreat. Can you look at a flower as what it is without a thought? Can you look at anything without a thought? Krishnamurti was so beautiful about this statement. It's not a matter of placating the human senses, the ego. Can you look at anything without a thought being attached to it, without losing the sacredness of that moment by handing that moment over to your own thoughts? Can you do that? Are you willing to do that? This takes a ruthless act, as it were, of loving compassion to no longer live as though we are dummies, stupid, chopping the tree down, killing the pig, all of these things that we do for the sake of trying to survive or get ahead. One of my very favorite stories is the philosopher and the skipper. Ollie was a philosopher who thought he knew everything there was to know. Everyone agreed that he had a broad knowledge of the sciences and the arts, and yet he insisted on bragging to one and all that he was the smartest man in town. I've had these students and they think they're so smart. Ali was a philosopher who thought he knew it all, okay? So Ali's friend Sam was bothered by this arrogance, this cavalier attitude, and tried hard to make Ali see the world around him and open his eyes up to something different. But his arguments were unproductive. Nothing happened. After taking the matter over with an idea that he had about a sailor that he knew that might help him and encourage him to go into something more humble, his friend booked a voyage on the sea to see if Ali could let go of what he thought of as his reality. And this is very difficult for people to do. They think in terms of their reality being only what they can experience through their five senses. The trip, this man thought, would show Ali the ways of life and expose him to difficulties that he would otherwise not experience because of his intellectual prowess. Ali was invited, and he liked the idea of going on the sea, and the arrangements were made. Once at sea, though, Ali, he liked to talk philosophy and impress the sailors. The skipper listened patiently while, without saying a word, never interrupted him, but did interrupt him to show him that he was bored with his talk by just ignoring what he was saying. Ali was annoyed by this. He wanted a reaction. Ali said, "Do you know anything about a philosophy?" to the captain of the ship, the skipper. "I'm afraid not," the skipper replied. "What a shame," said Ali, shaking his head, "for half of your life has been wasted not having such knowledge, understanding life, understanding how things operate." The skipper let the comment go unanswered and kept busy steering the ship. They sailed for days. Ali was enjoying himself, talking to everybody most of the time, explaining his ideas on philosophy, on government, on running the country, different problems that he did not bother to learn due to the fact that the captain was busy learning how to sail, learning how to navigate through difficult oceans and seas and events. When they cast anchor alongside a small island for a change of pace. Ali, who didn't know how to swim, did not take advantage of the calm waters, asked his sailor friends for swimming lessons. Neither did he care really about any other questions about life on the sea, but he thought he should ask. Well, they gave him rudimentary kinds of advice, and he found it difficult to learn how to swim. The next night, while they were in mid-ocean heading back home, the captain started to get concerned. There was an unmistakable sign that a storm was on its way, and the crew prepared to face the emergency. Only Ali remained calm in his cabin, his mind occupied by loftier matters, he so thought, and he just let this whole thing go. The wind blew, wrestling control of the ship in the captain's hands. It seemed like there was panicking going on because the captain could not keep the ship afloat. The vessel pitched and swayed, and the water was on the deck, and heavy rains were coming down, giant waves, and the ship was having difficulty. It was taking on water. The skipper shouted to the crew, "Prepare to abandon ship." The ship only had one lifeboat, and it was lowered into the water, and soon it became obvious that it would not hold all the men. The skipper and several of the sailors were preparing to jump into the open sea, take their chances swimming. "It's sinking, it's sinking." Ali confessed that he needed help. He didn't know what to do. The skipper hollered, "Do you know how to swim?" "No," Ali shouted back. "I never learned. I only had a few lessons." But they did not prove to help me be buoyed up by my energy, by my athletic ability, which I have none of. The skipper shook his head. He said, "What a shame. For all of your life, you have wasted not having the knowledge of how to swim." Well, the skipper and his crew were all saved that night by another vessel. Ali was rescued. He was scared. He was cold. He didn't know what to do. He had faced death, and all of his knowledge did not help him. All of his beliefs did not help him. All of his philosophies were gone in a moment, useless. A few years later, after the incident, Ali was presented with a gift from the skipper, who was now a close friend of his. It was a framed picture of a ship in stormy seas. And at the bottom of the picture was this inscription: "Only empty objects remain on the top of the water. Become empty of human attributes, and you will float on the ocean of creation." Very, very wise statement. Become empty. Empty of human attributes, traits, beliefs, and you will float on the ocean of life. This is why Lao Tzu says, it is not the space between heaven and earth like billows. It is empty, but it lacks nothing. The more it moves, the more comes out of it. It's not the space between heaven and earth within us, like those billows. We don't see that. We are stuck in our knowledge, in our beliefs, in our attitudes, in our assumptions, presumptions, and conclusions. We live as a conclusion. We have no emptiness in us to float to the top. We are so filled with our opinions, our ideals, the things we want to believe in, the difficulties of our mental acuity become very, very hazardous to not only our health, but our well-being. This is why Lhasa says, heaven and earth are ruthless. They see the 10,000 things as offerings, as dummies, he said. The wise are ruthless. They see people as offerings. I am an offering to the earth when I live from what I know, from what I think I know, from what I believe in, from my narrative that makes me think I know. I miss. Everything that we know is working against us. This is the bottom line. Because we have no emptiness, we can't float to the top on any given situation. We sink in the despair of what we think of as reality, but it is our reality, not reality. Reality is me facing my life from the Gregory Edward Penn point of view. And when I live from that attribute of my ego, my vanity, my pride, I become heavy. When I only live from what I think I know, I miss what is truly the way, the insight, the truth. Emptiness lacks nothing. Knowledge can lack many things. And knowledge always needs to be updated. Knowledge always needs to be something that we learn. But emptiness, that is the state of our being. That is the beauty of us. That is where the light is. And when I am interested in that light and not captivated by the darkness of my ego, I place myself in a unique situation, a place where love can reach me, where the goodness of my nature can reach me. How do I say this to you? Let go. Don't be captured by your intellect, by your body, by the 10,000 things that make us stupid, that dummy us down. Look at all events as a way to achieve no-thingness. We're going to work on this in our meditation. In our meditation here, let's let go. What would it be like to sit and know nothing? You would find the billows working. Heaven and earth would become one. It is hard for us to believe that giving up what we believe in, what we think we know, would be so beautiful, would be so helpful, that would help us bob above the water, the storms of our life, and never sink into despair. But it is true. Jesus talked about it this way, not my will, but thy will be done. This is a very simple insight, but it is also very effective. And if you are willing to go deeper inside yourself by letting go of your presumptions and assumptions, if you are willing to live beyond the beliefs you may have about right and wrong, good and bad, you will come into a place that is deeply significant. We don't believe in love. We don't believe that there is a higher form of living that is beyond the confines of our intellectual prowess. We just don't believe it, but it is true. If you can let go, if you can for a moment, let go. Let go of your mind, your emotions, your compelling emotion to survive through self-preservation. If you can do that, you will find the emptiness that Lhotse is talking about. Let's meditate. Placing ourselves in an inner posture of being so empty, we don't have an agenda any longer. We can bob up on the surface and not only live, but thrive.